This is an AMI podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Double Tap. It is Friday, it's the 12th of April, 2024. Coming up today, big news for Android users, and we get into the other week's news with Grace Schofield.
You're listening to Double Tap, your daily accessible technology show. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Sean Preece.
Hey, Sean Preece, how are you today? It's Friday.
Happy Friday to everyone. I am exhilarated today, Stephen Scott. Exhilarated, sir.
Oh, why? This is unusual for you.
I'll tell you why. This is going back to something we brought up the other day, actually, when we were talking about Voice Vista, right? Because today, breaking news, by the way, today...
Oh, hang on. There you go.
Breaking news.
You've got to give it the prominence. Right,
thank
you.
Get ready with the applause button. I reached a maximum speed of 3 miles per hour. Applause.
All right, I see.
Thank you.
Okay, hang on. Were you in a vehicle at the time?
There is a feature in Voice Vista. If you go to the settings and go to callouts and turn absolutely everything on, because I can't remember the individual option name.
Just turn everything on.
Everything on. When you're walking, it will say at some point, it will say the house number of the street you're on, but it will also say current speed, and it's usually 1 mile per hour for me. But today,
right. Okay.
I hit maximum speed of 3 miles. Honestly,
Now I'm getting it. Okay, right. No,
honestly, I've never
felt so alive.
I've never felt so free.
Hero.
I'm just saying, I think this should be a segment. I want everyone to test their speed, right? You know, there was a show over here called Top Gear, and they used to have star in a reasonably priced car, and they used to go around the track, and whoever was fastest, and they had a leaderboard. I think this is our segment. We should do this. Who's fastest on Voice Vista? Obviously, we need to work on the name, but I think this could be amazing.
Blind person going to the store
with
the fastest cane.
The fastest cane. Yeah, we'll work on it.
We'll workshop that one. I don't know where we're going with that. But okay. No, that's actually not a bad idea. I must say my walking speed is probably terrible. It's probably slower than 1 mile an hour, if I'm totally honest.
I have no idea. Well, whenever we meet up, Stephen Scott, and usually I hold onto your shoulder because you are basically a bulldozer when you're walking through a crowd. Everyone just sort of moves out of your way. You are speedy, so I would be interested. You need to check your speed.
Okay, all right. I will get to that. So that's in Voice Vista, right? I just go and turn everything on.
Turn all the call-outs on, yes, and then just go for a walk. I want to see your top speed.
And is it telling you that speed as you go along, or are you reading it at the end?
No, it will just shout it out as it does, as it shouts out the intersections or, points of interest. It will also at some point tell you which direction you're traveling in and your current speed.
All right. I will do that.
Thank you.
Before we do that, before we venture outside at the weekend and try that, I do have some big breaking news for you today.
Breaking news.
Yes, we do have breaking news, Sean. It's all about Braille and Android. A very interesting story, because as you know, there have been, let's just say, a few unhappy people regarding the issues in Android using Braille displays. Now, I thought we might get some assistance with this particular story, because we know a little bit about this. But, you know, it'd be kind of good to get an expert, yes, an actual expert, on the line with us. And joining us in the middle of quite a busy day, I have no doubt, Matthew Horspool. Great to have you here from the Braillist Foundation. How are you today, Matthew?
Oh, I'm very good, thank you. Thank you very much for the invitation to come on. It's a great pleasure.
Yeah, I know it's all a bit last minute. Of course, this news is fairly last minute as well. The announcement of Android 15, Beta 1, doesn't mean it's out yet, of course. This is just the beta. So, you know, a lot of work to do in terms of getting Android ready for version 15, which will come out, I guess, later in the year. But big news today, it looks like HID support for Braille displays via Bluetooth will finally be coming, and it should let devices like the Brilliant BI20X, the 40X, the Mantis Q40, possibly even the HumanWare e-reader connect to devices running Android 15 via Bluetooth. I think we need to break this down a little bit for people. What is the state of play at the moment with Android and Braille. What is going on at the moment that, that this is essentially fixing?
Yeah, so essentially there's been a bit of a tug of war, really, between HumanWare and Google. And this is quite well documented. You know, HumanWare have done several interviews in which they've said, well, actually, when we published, when we released our Mantis Braille display and our Brailleant Braille displays, we made a commitment to use the new HID, Human Interface Device protocol, and all of the manufacturers made a commitment to use that as well, and then the manufacturers went back on their commitments, and that's HumanWare's position on it. And so HID Braille is kind of a new way of doing Braille where instead of having to write a separate driver for every single Braille display on the market, if the Braille display supports HID, then in theory, the device can just use a generic Braille driver, and any Braille display that supports HID will work with that generic Braille driver. And it's that generic Braille driver that Android up until now has been missing. And HumanWare haven't wanted to retrofit support for their Braille displays to Android. They've wanted Android to catch up and introduce the generic driver. And that's what they've done in this release. So it really is actually quite a big deal.
Yeah, this is basically what Universal Plug and Play did with USB back in the day with Windows. This just opens it all up. You don't have to worry about installing any special drivers or any platform you're connecting to. Basically, now this is, hopefully, it should be that any Braille display works with any device as long as it supports HID, right?
Yeah, so both devices have got to support it. So a lot of older Braille displays haven't been affected by this. Like if you were using a Focus Braille display, those Focus Braille displays would always work with Android because they were released before the HID standard really came about. But it's these newer displays like the Chameleon, like the Mantis, like the Brailliant that never had that retrofitted, you know, driver because that the HID standard was a thing by then. All of those are now going to work with Android in theory. I don't know. It's such a breaking announcement that I don't know if anyone's actually tested it yet. But certainly it's very exciting. And the theory is that all of those Braille displays will now work.
And I want to play in a clip here. This was when we spoke to Christopher Patno from Google 2 years ago. We put this question to him because there was many people in the community upset about the fact that this wasn't available as yet. And here's what Christopher Patno had to say then about the issue.
It's going to take some changes in terms of the Linux kernel. And if you understand how operating systems are built, this is as low level as you can get. And the ramifications are large. So this is not something that we can just easily turn around in a couple of months. To our knowledge, with very few exceptions, all devices today support either the HID or both the RFCOM and the HID support. There's only been, like, I think, one or two devices that only support the HID. And from what I understand, there's been even a bit of blowback for them for having not supported the older version. So hopefully they can step up. I don't want to name names. But hopefully they'll be able to step up and add this RFCOM support so everybody can use their devices as the industry as a whole moves forward to make these changes.
So Christopher Patno, they're not naming names.
Yeah, so I'm naming HumanWare because HumanWare have come out and done interviews. I don't feel like I'm really upsetting anybody there. Just to offer some clarity, so HumanWare actually do support the HID standard. HumanWare were one of the companies that didn't support what Christopher Patno called the RFCOM standard. So because HumanWare didn't support the RFCOM standard, Android support was not there for the Mantis and the Brailleant. Because HumanWare do support the HID standard, and because Google now support the HID standard in this beta 1, the Mantis and the Brailleant should work.
Okay. Early days, obviously, and we do need to test all this. Just to be really clear, for the non-techies who are into this stuff to some degree, for example, someone who has a Braille display doesn't fully understand all of these RFCOM and USB overhead and Bluetooth overhead and what all that means. What is essentially the result today when you plug in a Braille display via USB and connect it via Bluetooth compared to what would happen with Android 15 in this beta 1?
Yeah, so if you have a Braille display and it currently works with Android, the result is that it will still work with Android, that nothing has changed, you've not lost anything, everything's going to stay as it is. If you have a Braille display and you have an Android phone and they're currently not talking to each other, the result of Android 15 should be that those displays should now start talking to those Android devices.
Got you.
Well, thank you so much. I was so confused with all these different standards and different types of Braille displays that would work, and I think you've made a great job of explaining that. So thank you so much, Matthew.
Yeah, Matthew, thanks a lot for jumping on. I know it's a busy day for you. Thank you for your time today, and we'll watch this story with interest, and we'll get you back on soon.
No worries. Thank you very much.
And as we are recording this today, of course, Friday, April 12th, we've just had word from the guys over at the Blind Android Users podcast. Some of their team have been testing this out already, and they can confirm that this is working, Sean. So that is fantastic news. This is up and running, clearly, and it sounds like it's a big deal.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Anyone with a Braille display using an Android device, this is going to be really good news, obviously. It just opens it all up and makes it so much easier. You don't have to think about, okay, which Braille display have I got? Will it work with this? I mean, it just takes a little bit more more of the hassle out of it, which is a great thing.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, let's catch up with some of the other day's big news and the week's big news in tech. Grace Schofield is back, Sean.
Hooray!
She's back with us and she's feeling better. So Grace, over to you with the Double Tap News.
Thanks, guys. And it is great to be back. So let's get into the news. Waymap, a pioneering tech startup based out of London, England, has secured $13 million Canadian in funding this week, led by the TELUS Pollinator Fund for Good. The navigation app aims to broaden its global reach across Asia Pacific and the Middle East. The investment will help Waymap's mission to improve navigation through its unique app, which offers different to traditional GPS services. Waymap provides outdoor, indoor, and underground navigation for those with visual impairments or other disabilities. Roku is stepping up its accessibility game, announcing new certification requirements for app developers aimed at making their platform friendlier for people who are disabled. By October 1st, 2024, the company says all apps on Roku must include features like closed captions, audio descriptions, and also adhere to specific global settings for accessibility. A notable update is the introduction of a unified autoplay disable function, allowing users to turn off autoplay across all apps with a single click. Developers failing to update their apps with these enhancements by the deadline will find their content absent from the Roku App Store. Could devices like the new Rabbit R1 make life easier for people with disabilities? Head of Digital Inclusion at AbilityNet and regular contributor to DoubleTap, Robin Christopherson, certainly thinks so. In a blog post for his organization, Robin explains that while large language models help us interact with artificial intelligence through voice and text input, the new large action model shown off on the new Rabbit R1 device will make it possible for people to do more online with less clicks, swipes, and gestures. Speaking to Stephen and Sean for an upcoming Double Tap on YouTube episode, Robin outlined his reasoning further.
As we all know, using websites in particular can, you know, they're really complicated. There's loads of information on there. It's so much, you know, potential for not knowing what you're doing, not being able to interact with things, not getting the visual clues about, oh, here's the obvious button to click on because it's not marked up in a way that our screen reader kind of picks it out as an important button. And obviously, in the worst case scenario, we can't even use that website at all because it's not accessible.
Elsewhere in the tech world this week, Microsoft's soon-to-be-released ARM laptops could potentially outshine Apple's M3 MacBook Air in performance. Set for a grand reveal on May 20th, these AI PCs will be powered by Qualcomm's cutting-edge Snapdragon X Elite processors. Early reports suggest that in CPU tasks, AI acceleration, and app emulation, Microsoft's latest offering might just have the edge over the MacBook Air, challenging Apple's dominance since its switch to Silicon in 2020. Silicon Valley is buzzing this week with the alleged story that OpenAI CEO Sam Altman and former Apple lead designer Johnny Ive are collaborating on a $1 billion AI-powered personal device company. The proposed device will not look like a phone and will likely integrate OpenAI's conversational AI technology. While people are definitely interested, there have been concerns about blurring the lines between OpenAI and Sam Altman's slew of other companies and interests. Google has launched a Find My Device network that is able to use millions of Android devices to track down lost, stolen, and missing Android products. A lost Android smartphone is able to ping nearby Android devices using Bluetooth, relaying information back to the owner. Because the network uses Bluetooth, it works even when the devices are offline and don't have a cellular or Wi-Fi connection. Starting in May, the Find My Device network for Android will also work with Bluetooth trackers from companies like Chipolo and Pebblebee, allowing Android users to attach trackers to items to locate them with the Android network. And finally, it might not seem like it, but it was 32 years ago this week that a significant milestone was reached by Microsoft. And what was that? It was the release of Windows 3.1.
Wow.
Following the success of Windows 3.0, which sold 10 million copies in its first 2 years, Windows 3.1 built on that foundation, with new features like TrueType fonts, multimedia support including Windows Media Player, and SVGA color support for advanced monitors. A notable addition was Minesweeper, quickly becoming a popular pastime. Windows 3.1's launch was a triumph, selling 3 million copies in just 3 months. It set the stage for Windows 95, heralding a new era of user interfaces and features. Windows 3.1's legacy extends even today, with parts of it still powering systems like the German ICE railroad network. It was great to be back, and that's your Double Tap News for this week. I'm Grace Schofield.
Oh, thank you, Grace. Great to have you back. So glad you are with us this week and feeling better. That is great news. Goodness me, 32 years since Windows 3.1. I feel very old.
I know.
I remember 3.1. I mean, I was a baby, but I remember it.
You weren't a baby at all. No, of course. Yes. I learned to program before Windows was released. Wow, I feel
before,
old.
Before? You're even older than Windows 3.1.
Yes, I learned on Unix. Wow. And we're so old, Stephen Scott. There are some, I'm skipping over that story. I got to say, there's some amazing stories in there. I'm really impressed with Roku.
Yes, I mean,
that's,
I know.
That's a line in the sand to draw. If you don't hit these accessibility standards, you're out of the App Store. I mean, who else has ever done that? That's pretty cool.
You know, even Apple don't do that.
No.
Which I find is incredible. Yeah, it's been called for by many, many people. Great to hear. Although, you know, still seeing a little bit of online people saying, yeah, but, you know, Roku itself could do with improving some features on its box as well. So, yeah, I mean, I think all of these devices, I don't think any of them are perfect. Any of them. I mean, even the Apple TV, which is probably the closest to it. I still don't think it's perfect either. And again, a lot of that is to do with third-party apps. We need to be pushing these companies to do better when it comes to accessibility. You know, at the end of the day, again, we come back to the same story. We are customers. We're willing to pay. There are some fantastic services out there providing lots of content, lots of audio-described content, but the app is not accessible. And that can be a problem. Or the app is just not working properly, or there's issues with it. It's not good enough. It's just not good enough anymore.
No, it isn't. I'm thinking of ITVX on the Apple TV.
In the UK, yeah, which is exactly what I'm thinking of. And you know, the irritant for me, and I've been in touch with ITV about this, and I know others are too, and there's an ongoing conversation. But the irritant here is they put so much work and effort into making their shows accessible, as in making sure they have content that is audio described, all their new dramas, even past dramas. They have a wealth of content in that library that is accessible. And what I would be interested in watching, I've been spending a lot of time watching ITV dramas, but the content is hard to get to because the app on the Apple TV, for example, doesn't work at all with voiceover. It's useless.
It doesn't tell you
and
the show's
thing. That's the frustration. You know, it's not that we're shouting at you and saying it's terrible.
It's terrible.
But the point is, we're not shouting at you and saying everything is terrible. We're saying your stuff is great. Can we get access to it too, please? You know that content you made for us?
Yes, and that is accessible on other platforms, by the way.
Yeah,
Can you just fix this? Yeah. Some great news.
Good news. Also, the other story, which I thought was quite interesting there, is the Microsoft story. The talk of these new straps, what's it called? Snapdragon Elite X, or whatever they're calling it. This is the new processor to rival the MacBook M3. So there's an interesting take on all this, because people are saying, well, look, you know, it's a little bit unfair to say that the that this processor potentially will reach the same standard or you know, capabilities of what Apple have done with the M3 silicon chip. Because a lot of people are saying, well, look, you know, I'm running a Surface Pro from 2 years ago that works absolutely fine. That does actually the job. And at the end of the day, it's down to the tasks you want to do. So I think...
No.
Well, that is. I mean, look, a lot of people are running perfectly good systems today. They're not having issues that would be, you know, would you say that, you know, you could compare... And can you even compare at this point? Can you compare Intel processors to these new silicon chips? I mean, I think once you get this processor, you can have a serious discussion about similarities. I don't think you can do that at this stage. I don't think that's fair.
It's all about the switch to ARM processors from the legacy x86 that we've been using for the longest time, that Windows runs on and is based on, which is what Apple did when they switched to their Apple Silicon, which is an ARM-based processor. Basically, it's a different way of running programs, right? It's a reduced instruction set. It's a RISC chip. Now, because of that, you need to translate older programs and software that was coded for x86. It needs that translation layer to run on this different architecture of these ARM chips. And every time Windows has tried this in the past, that translation layer has been so slow. If you try and run some software that's designed for x86, and look, let's not forget, Windows is massive and is legacy. There's so many businesses are based on, as we just heard, Windows 3.1 even.
Yes, running railroads still.
But there's so many advantages to switching over to ARM chips. You know, the much lower power consumption, that instant boot that, you know, you can shut it and turn it back on instantly. Yeah,
hang on. Can I just put this into English for people? Because I think it might be simpler just
to carried
say,
away.
Why don't we just rewrite Windows from the ground up? Because that's essentially what Apple did for Silicon, right? So it's the same thing need to do for Windows. That's because there's too much legacy in Windows. That's the problem. I mean,
there is.
We talk about Windows 3.1 as if it's some old relic. There are still elements of Windows today.
Yes.
But that's the point. There are still elements of Windows 3.1 still in that OS today.
But why? Because they need to keep that legacy.
Because there's
support.
A railroad in Germany that will collapse. If you delete it.
And that's exactly the problem. And Apple didn't rewrite from scratch. They have this thing called, is it the Rosetta Stone 2? Rosetta 2 translation layer. And the thing that blew us away.
Transition layer is what I would call it.
Okay. Well done.
Well, because you're essentially moving across, right? That's what it was for. It was to get you, the bridge between the old system and the new.
Okay, if you want to say, okay, translate. Basically,
transition.
The thing we were blown away was how quickly, how efficient that worked. Because in the past, it was always slow and it was laggy and it was unreliable. Yeah. Now, if Microsoft are saying, we now have, using this new chip and the new software, the new translation layer, and I'm not convinced it's just software, by the way. I think there's something in this new chip that are doing these translations in hardware as well. If they can make it seamless running x86 hardware on this new ARM chip, they're onto a winner. This is going to be exciting. You're going to get those sexy devices again, those sexy ARM Surface devices that lasted for about 3 months before people said, yeah, but I can't run anything on them.
Yeah, that's right.
Those are going to take off again. We're going to see much better performance on sexier hardware.
That is the problem with Windows, truthfully. That is the issue. It's the legacy software that kind of holds it back. It almost does need to start again. And maybe
it's
even
its own success.
Yeah, it is, you know, because Microsoft is used everywhere. You know, it's in so many things. And, you know, it's like, you know, the German railroad is one example, but there are medical systems in hospitals that, you know, rely on it, that rely on older versions of Windows that must be maintained. It's a huge job to keep all that up. And it's very difficult to get businesses and organizations to move on with that because you have to get the buy-in from corporate. And, you know, you're talking most of the businesses in the world, that could be a challenge.
Yes.
I mean, you could just do an Apple. Microsoft could just pull an Apple and just say, right, that's it. No more support. We're pulling up the drawbridge in 2027. So get with it, daddy-o, or else, you know, nothing works. And sorry, your German trains have just all stopped.
Daddy-o.
Tough. That's it. They're not going to put me in charge of the corporate bill, right?
Because they're so cool. Yes. That's it, daddy-o. This disco is over.
Come on, granddad. Time to move on. Get rid of Windows four or whatever you're running.
If Apple had the same enterprise pickup or take up as Microsoft, I'm not sure they would have done that. I think they would have probably been stuck in the same problem.
Interesting. Okay. Interesting.
Okay. All right.
I think Apple are going to blow all this out of the water, though, this year, because there's more rumors of M4 coming this year. Okay, so...
Give Microsoft a chance. Come on.
it's as good as the M3, which is now trashed. This is the problem. Every time you turn around with Apple, there's another new process. I'm getting a bit fed up with this, to be honest. But I feel, again, there's another bit of victim of success here. Apple have done really well with the M-series silicon chips that they've created. And they're obviously on a path to develop these. This new range of chips that are due to come out this year will be with AI in mind. So the neural engine that's inside this processor, which essentially makes it possible to do all this onboard processing of artificial intelligence, that is going to be the main focus, it would appear, in these rumored new M4 chips. We say rumored. I mean, of course there are going to be new M4 chips. That's no doubt at all. No. And it would make sense, since they've been doing it every year since it came out, that it will be this year. It started in 2020 and it will continue. So this is the year for M4. From a consumer point of view, this must be so irritating because, you know, it feels like every time you buy a new machine, not only a new machine might come out, but a whole new processor, which is even bigger and even faster and will cost you thousands of dollars more. And it must be so frustrating. It's funny, actually, I was thinking about this the other day. I remember I said to you when the M3 processors came out on the MacBook Air, You said, you're going to buy one of these. I said, no, I'm not. And I didn't because I am a hero.
Not yet.
Yes.
Not yet. And now you're waiting for the M4 to come out.
Now, I'll be honest,
yes.
The M4 is way more appealing if it's focused
because
on AI.
Because of the AI.
Yeah. I mean, yes, we'll see what that actually means at WWDC, I'm guessing. We'll get the information about this. Well,
again, it makes WWDC even more appealing to me. I can't wait to see what's going to come up now, because there's definitely going to be some talk of AI in there.
But the interesting thing here is these rumors are circulating 6 months after the launch of the M3 chip. So... we shall see. And there's even talk of them bringing out at WWDC the M3 Ultra. I'm so confused by this. Why wouldn't you just move on? Why do this? Why encourage people to buy new processors when you're going to update them anyway? Wouldn't it make more sense just at WWDC to say, right, look, M4 is the new marker in the sand, and this is it? Because they're saying that this is going to roll out over 2024 and 2025 with this focus on AI. Now, this obviously indicates, and these are rumors, but this indicates how this rollout is going to happen. We know that the new operating systems for macOS and iOS always appear around about September, October, right? So that's the time they generally appear for release and public release. So with that in mind, it would make sense for these new computers, these new processors to be available at that time. But to go into June and say, here's the new version of the M3 that's coming out, when only a few months later, everything's going to update to M4, just seems ridiculous to me. And I think they've made a mistake with this. I think they should wait, and they should just focus on M4. That is going to be where the sales are going to be. That's where the interest is going to be. It's all going to be in AI, what they are doing. And if you buy something today, like, I mean, it makes me think right now, okay, what is in this new M4 processor that is going to make the existing M2 that I've got useless or less appealing or less capable?
AI. And it's not just going to be the M4. I've got a feeling this is just going to be the M4 plus the new version or the new generation of the neural engine chip, which is going to be for the AI. Or I don't know if it's going to be built in, maybe. But, I mean, look, there's two angles to this. There's the common sense, of course. I mean, it makes sense for people just to, okay, here's the M4 now. We'll forget about the rest. This is the M4. But from a business point of view, there's a different whole mindset to that. It's the same as when Apple Silicon was released, and yet they were still selling devices with Intel chips in there. And you're thinking, why on earth would anyone go for Intel now?
I kind of understood why they did that to some degree, because there was a transition period. I kind of understand that. Yeah, exactly. But I think, you know, moving forward, they've either got to... To me, it just seems ridiculous that they're going to have this rollout of new processors every year. It just seems too much.
It's to get people like you.
Yeah, but, you know, the problem
there
is...
There are limits.
Well, there are very few people like me, I imagine, who would want to buy a new machine like this every single year. And even I'm not one of those people anymore.
No.
I'm not doing it. I'm not buying. I mean, as much as I'm hearing great things about the new MacBooks and well, the MacBook Air at least, and the MacBook Pros, I'm not prepared to make the leap. My machine, my main driver every day, is a Mac Mini with an M2 Pro chip in it, and it is great. My laptop is a MacBook Air, the 15-inch MacBook Air that I got with M2. It's got the 8 gig of RAM. It's fine. It does the job fine. Does what I need it to do for my daily use cases. And you know, to be fair as well, you don't have to obviously go ahead and upgrade. That's not what I'm suggesting. I'm not saying everybody should toss out their Macs on, you know, in September and buy these new ones. What I'm saying is, for our benefit as consumers, it might be helpful for Apple to make a decision and say, right, look, M4 from September, that's it, and then maybe M5 in 2026. You know, that would make sense to me from a rollout, because that's what they used to do. They didn't bring out new processors
from
every single year from memory.
Point of view, that makes sense. From a business point of view.
From a business point of view,
not so sure.
Look, we'll get into more stories and your feedback as well. Lots to come. It's a busy day on Double Tap.
Follow Double Tap on social media at Double Tap On Air and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and email us feedback@doubletaponair.com. We'll be right back. Call the Double Tappers now, 1-877-803-4567, or email us feedback@doubletaponair.com.
Hey, listen, if you're a fan of Be My Eyes or Be My AI or any of the Be My series, then you can vote for them. You can vote for them in the Webby Awards. The People's Voice is the 28th annual Webby Awards. And this is something that allows you to promote whatever it might be, you know, whatever organization, whatever app you may be using. Be My AI is in there and you can go vote for it now. So if you're interested in that and supporting them, webbyawards.com. That's WEBBY awards.com. So just something you might want to do.
I'm there now.
Excellent. Good.
They deserve
I know
it.
That's a lie. But I know you will be there later. Okay, so let's move on, because we get so many of your messages in. And of course, the big story of the week, I suppose, is the Voice Dream Reader news. More of you getting in touch with your views on this. Here's what Debbie had to say.
Hi, guys. I'm Debbie Hazelton. I've been enjoying you so much, following you on Mastodon, loving your shows, love the humor, and many of the comments about all sorts of things. So I do want to say a few words about this Voice Dream situation. Steve, you talk about consequences, and I know that's real and that's valid. I talk about customer service, and I think they both are important. My thing is that the businesses that foster a relationship with people are more likely the ones that I'm going to support. And I don't know if they did the right thing in rescinding this. However, the fact that they did do something makes me much more likely to not only subscribe, but give extra money to support them in a way that maybe will help in case someone else hasn't or can't. I was one who purchased for life, never thought about it. I mean, I never thought about most of the apps that I purchased. I did wonder in the very beginning when I got an iPhone back in 2010, wow, an app is free or an app is only a dollar? I don't remember what I paid for VoiceDream way back when. But I know that I probably would have respected them a lot more had I heard from them periodically about what they're doing with the app, what they want to do, what they've realized since they bought it. Now, when you talk about consequences, I have to wonder, what were they thinking when they purchased it? Did they not look to know what it was going to cost to either maintain or upgrade? And does that mean, you asked the other day, does that mean can anybody make a mistake? Well, sure. But again, I didn't feel that we had any kind of a relationship, any kind of a trust build up to know who they are. They could have said, yeah, it's going to be a new tier, not the ones you cry, but a new level to get the new features in this app or a new app, like you said. That makes perfect sense. What I said, I was one who wrote about bullying. First of all, I agree. I never thought of going to the app store and complaining or going and giving it a low rating. I just never thought of doing any of that. I didn't write and complain. All I had said was I wasn't sure that I was going to upgrade based on how I heard them in the interview. But the bullying that I didn't like was the bullying of blind people against blind people. I think that very often in our community, there is a form of, well, some really don't like it when people speak out. Some wrote that they were embarrassed. Yeah, I've been embarrassed by how much noise some have made in certain areas, certain topics, places. I've been embarrassed by sighted people. I also know that when I'm embarrassed, that I don't have to take that on. And it might be about the behavior of the people who are doing whatever. But as soon as I saw that they had rescinded, I saw somebody say, well, there you go. If the app works terribly now, it's going to be your fault. I think of that as bullying. I don't care for that at all. But in any case, I probably will support them now and see how it goes and hope for the best. I agree with you. I don't know that it should have been for life. I don't know that any app really, maybe because they charged more for it in the beginning, they thought that was a good thing to say. Anyway, keep on keeping on. Good stuff, you guys. Thanks so much for just being good to your customers in what you produce every day. You want a subscription? Maybe I'll send you some money. Thanks. Thanks so much. Bye for now.
Fried chicken, Debbie. That's all we need. Fried chicken to Manchester, England and Glasgow, Scotland. If you can make that happen, we will be very happy.
Yes, we will. Thank you so much. That was a great email.
Yes, it was. Now, Jewel also got in touch on VoiceStream Reader changes. Laura reads this response.
Hello. I originally purchased VoiceStream Reader a year after it came out at full price, which I believe was $30. I bought it again in 2020 after my iOS account was lost due to a bricked iPhone. In addition, I bought many voices at prices ranging from $1.99 to $5.99, if my memory serves me correctly, and it may not. I don't think we should be talking about this as a problem of a free app. Many of us purchased the app years ago, just as many of us bought a Jaws license years ago before it offered the annual subscription. In case you are not familiar with this, I will describe their system. I got a proprietary lifetime license for Jaws in 2011 while attending college. This gave me access to that version of Jaws for life, and I do not have to buy the annual subscription. However, that doesn't include updated features, for which I need an SMA, which then gives me access to new features in the updates for 2 years, and that new updated version becomes my lifetime version. If I stopped purchasing SMAs, I would still have access to Jaws as long as I wanted to use it, and that version was supported on my computer, but would no longer have access to updates. This model is both sustainable and fair to the proprietary license holders who invested considerable amounts of money for a program that they were told would be theirs to keep. In the same way, many apps are free to download or cost a small price, then offer additional features with in-app purchases. If you desire the additional features, such as no ads, additional journal entries, spiffy new avatars, etc., you can purchase them, but you continue to have access to the version you paid for and any extras you purchased. In this way, I feel the only appropriate business model for an app that allowed people to buy a license outright is to offer additional features with in-app purchases, but maintain the original version plus any features purchased to be accessed. This is simple supply and demand. If customers want the extra features, they will purchase them. If they don't, they won't. Now that legacy members have been given back the access they purchased, which for me was more than equivalent to a year's subscription at the new price, I would hope they would consider doing the same as Vispero and many app developers have done, giving basic access to the people who bought the app originally with the understanding that the app was theirs to use as long as they wanted it and it was supported by their device and present new features as in-app purchases. I'm willing to bet if they sought investors for the Kindle integration, they would find that it would be a good return of investment. As long as they continue to offer new features, I'm sure people will be willing to continue to purchase them if it is something they desire. Of course, knowing what customers desire as new features will require that they stay in communication with their customer base, something they have yet to show themselves capable of doing. Let us hope they regain our trust. Personally, I use VD Reader so infrequently these days, mostly due to its poor access via Braille display, that I don't see myself paying for a $60 subscription, without the improvement to Braille access. If they can address that issue, allowing a Braille display to advance through the whole book without changing the page and redisplaying the last line of the previous page, I would consider an in-app purchase for Kindle integration. Without Braille access, however, I don't see myself using the app any more than I already do, which is to say rarely, as speech-to-text without interaction tends to put me to sleep. Thank you for hearing me out, and I hope the Applause Group does a better job of communicating with and listening to its customer base to provide features they want, while keeping the promise that legacy customers were given a year ago that subscriptions would not affect them when it came to the current features. Sincerely, Jewel in Tennessee.
Jewel, thank you for your comment, and I take it all on board, as I think we all do at this stage. What is done is done, and I guess it is now time will tell what happens next, who buys, who doesn't, who yeah. subscribes, who doesn't, what the legacy of this app will end up being. We will only know in time, but thank you for that. Thank you for all your comments on this, all your considered comments as well. I really do appreciate them on this topic, which I know has been a big, big conversation point in our community for sure. Moving on to Emmy in Finland, who got in touch with us recently, having some issues with Face ID. Maybe you can help.
This is Emmy from Finland once again. I was wondering if any of you have had any problems with Face ID and iPhone 14. It's been super difficult to set up. I just can't get my face to the right spot. And once I had sighted assistance and managed to set up the Face ID, but then it didn't work. I tried everything and it never recognized my face. So I deleted it and I'm using passcode, which is slow. And I would like to have Face ID, but I don't know.
Any thoughts on that one, Sean? I mean, it doesn't sound specific to the phone, the issue. I mean, Face ID can be tricky to set up. It is often difficult to get everything in position, your face in position, the camera as far away as it needs to be, all of that.
Well, anything which says put your face in frame or put your credit card in frame, I always think, oh, no. But I've got to say, I haven't personally had many issues with setting up Face ID, but then again, I haven't set it up many times because it's something I do when I set up a new phone. It's tricky to give specific advice on this, but in general, you know, you hold your phone a good 10 inches away, an arm's length away is fine. As long as it's pointing towards you, you always get the voice prompts telling you it's not in frame or is in frame, and it will start straight away when it is in frame. And I simply turn my head in a circle, look left, look right, look up, look down, and just let it do its thing. Now, there are a couple of things that can get in the way, I've noticed, of Face ID working at its best, and that's usually to do with screen protectors or cases with built-in screen protectors. Sometimes they can, distort the Face ID projector. It uses an infrared projector at the top of the screen to spray out infrared dots, and that's how it recognizes you. So anything
technical term.
Yes, thank you. Spray out. Yes, it's basically a 10,000 remote controls built in there and just pointing at your face. So if there's anything at all that's in there, maybe some dirt or anything, then definitely check that. If you've got a screen protector on, make sure there's no bubbles that's causing any issues. Secondly, you can also set up a second face with Face ID, an alternate face, I believe they call it, or alternative appearance. So always go through and add two scans of your face. You may find it gives you more success.
Very interesting. Okay, well, we get another comment from Emmy here, part two of her message, and this is about Pi, your favourite topic.
Pi. I just downloaded Pi, and I've been having a long and nice conversation about books with it, and it's very cool to talk with Pi, so no wonder Sean likes it, so yeah. I was able to teach her something new. I talked about this newly released book called Anibot. You can get it from Audible. I got it, but I haven't listened to it yet. But anyway, so Pai hadn't heard about that book. She asked for book recommendations or something like that, and I was able to tell her about the book, and she searched the internet, I believe, apparently, and got the author right and knew what I was talking about. And I just listened to your latest podcast episode, and you talked about ice cream vans. And we have those two here in Finland, and I always go there with my mom and buy some ice cream. So I love ice cream vans. They are awesome. Yeah. I don't know if they do Applebee though. I should ask. Anyway, keep up the good work and bye for now.
Wasn't there a time when there was an Android version called Ice Cream Sandwich? I vaguely remember this.
Of course there was. Oh, I miss those days when they were named after desserts and sweets. That was cool. Jelly Bean, Kit Kat.
That's right.
Yes. I've forgotten every single other version. But yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you're enjoying pie. I think it's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, Sean, it's because of you no one can get any access to it anymore. Thank you, Sean.
Sorry, I find it's sped up a little bit. It's now more responsive. Keep trying.
It is interesting, isn't it? Because I imagine a lot of people who are sort of coming to it for the first time are just having those long conversations with it. You know, just getting into a conversation about a topic or interest. And it's funny, even if you think you're the kind of person who would never use something like this, what would I talk to it about might be the first question in your mind. It is amazing how quickly, if you've got a question, you'll start talking with it.
Yeah.
I can't wait for this to appear with Lady A. It's just going to be... well, yeah, I'll basically just be doing that. The good thing is, I mean, you can look at it two ways. One, I'm getting attached to a computer in a perhaps unhealthy way. The other side of that coin is I'm not calling you every 10 minutes.
Fantastic.
Every cloud.
Yes.
Every cloud.
Right. No, it's so involving. And I just mean, it's just the way that you interact with it. I ask it all the time about news stories, and there's always an element that I don't quite understand, always. So I'll just say, give me more detail on this aspect of it. And it's just so useful. Amazing.
Greg's got in touch on canes and micro Bluetooth.
Hi, Stephen and Sean. This is Gregory from the state of Illinois. Wanted to comment on the discussion about how Sean uses his white cane. Oof. I also have my right arm down at my side while holding a longer than normal length white cane.
Ha!
I use a shoreline method by finding edges and other tactile feedback through the cane. This method was shown to me by an O&M instructor at the Leader Dog organization located near Detroit, Michigan. An Illinois O&M instructor said I was incorrectly using my cane by the drop to my side method. Stephen may know this instructor. Stephen should try this method. Have never poked myself in the gut. Leader Dog also graciously gave me that white cane, which was from Ambutech. This cane is my everyday cane and I've used it since 2013. Most likely lasted so long by avoiding those pesky refrigerators at my inconvenience store. Just received a tip for the cane from Ambutech ordered on Amazon. Thought I was getting a high-mileage roller tip. Have always used roller tips, but somehow I mistakenly ordered a non-roller tip. The tip is definitely a high-mileage tip because it weighs more and has a different sound. Decided to keep the tip and see how long it lasts. When I was training at Leader Dog, they also let me borrow a pair of sunglasses from a company called Noir. After returning home from Michigan in 2013, I ordered a pair from Noir and still use them every day. These glasses are very durable and adjustable. The company offers a variety of frames and lens and was very useful for people like me who have RP. On another topic, my Victor Reader Stream 2 does not have Bluetooth. Was thinking of a micro Bluetooth device that uses the 3.5mm jack on the reader. Do you have a suggestion for a micro Bluetooth device? Sean, my Arcanite USB fingerprint reader works good. Thanks for the Sean of the Shed review of the fingerprint reader. I may submit some feedback on the Celeste smart glasses after the beta program. Double Tap Canada is a great informational and entertainment podcast with very little tech thrown in. Mr. F must be very proud. Take care and carry on. Greg from Illinois.
The tech is only ever brought in by you guys. It's never brought in by us.
No. Thank you, Greg.
Honestly, thank you for that. That's brilliant. What did I want to pick up on? And there were so many. I was trying to remember as I was going along all the things I wanted to pick up on.
I know we're terrible at this. We're too old. Our memory's not up to it.
More fish. I've got to eat more fish in my diet. I think you get some memory going here.
Thank you for the Arcanet fingerprint scanner. Yes, I it's just so easy to use. If you haven't got a fingerprint scanner on your whatever computer, your Windows computer, your laptop, if you haven't got a fingerprint scanner on there, they're so cheap. You just plug it into your USB. It's plug and play. You don't have to install anything. And then you simply type fingerprint into the start menu and you add your fingerprint. Then you can just log in by touching your finger on the fingerprint scanner. It's so easy, so cheap.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Really good. Unless you take it in your back pocket to Vienna with you, and it gets confiscated.
I lost it. I've had no
idea. Contraband.
Why did I put it in my pocket? I don't know what I was thinking.
Why do you do anything? That is the question I ask myself. Micro Bluetooth, that's what you were asking about. Now, it's interesting. There's lots of different little devices you can buy, and they often are no-name devices. I mean, they're just, you know, Amazon are like, you have these weird names just pop up with this. But you can get these tiny little, exactly as you're saying, little micro Bluetooth transmitters that plug in. They often need to be charged themselves via USB-C or whatever. So you can plug them in, you can charge them up. They're very, very inexpensive. I wouldn't worry too much about the type of brand you go for. However, if you are interested in a brand, there's one from a company called 12 South, and they create a product called the AirFly, which is actually a brilliant little device because what it does is it works with your AirPods. So you can connect your AirPods to the device, and then you can plug the little device, which is separate. It's like a little dongle and has a 3.5mm headphone jack on it. And that headphone jack can plug into anything you want. And then the sound wirelessly transmits from that to your AirPods. So that's one way to use your AirPods, say, with a VictorReader Stream 2.
Oh, so very nice. Work. But that is that Bluetooth as well, or is it purely AirPlay?
No, I don't think it's AirPlay. It must be Bluetooth, I think.
Do you think?
I can't imagine it would be AirPlay.
Double check
that. I don't think it is, just because of the nature of how it works. But I would imagine it would be Bluetooth, wouldn't it?
Well, just working with the AirPods, I would just assume it was AirPlay first. But that doesn't mean it's not Bluetooth as well. But just double check that it supports Bluetooth, all Bluetooth devices. But, yeah. I mean, as you said, there's so many different ones out there. The only advice I would give, really, is that I would go for one that's both a transmitter and receiver. I mean, there's barely any price difference in between the two different types, but it means that you're covered for every eventuality. If you want to send something to a device that has a line in, for example, you can Bluetooth into it using the device, and you can also send a Bluetooth signal out from a headphone jack to pick up on a Bluetooth headset. So, yeah, they're all pretty much the same, aren't they?
One more to get to, and I should say there are tons of emails to get through, but there's one more we can fit in today. And this is from Angela on the subject of audio description in sports.
Hey there, how's it going? I'm Angela from Libya. It's my first time reaching out, even though I've been a big fan of your podcast for ages. I just love everything you guys do. I've got a bit of an unusual question. So yesterday I was listening to Ira's audio description of the solar eclipse event, and it got me thinking. Is there any chance there's a program or app out there that does audio descriptions for sports events? You know, like the opening ceremonies for big football tournaments, the World Cup kickoff, the closing celebrations, award ceremonies, and all that good stuff. I'm a huge football or soccer fan, and I think it would be so cool if blind folks could experience these big moments through audio descriptions. Sure, my little brother and mum do their best to describe things to me, but having a description from someone who really knows how to paint a picture for blind and visually impaired folks would be absolutely incredible. Thanks, guys, for everything you do.
Wow, thank you, Angela. Lovely to meet your acquaintance. Thank you for getting in touch.
Yeah.
And thank you for listening to us. It's such an interesting topic, this, because it's something I've been thinking about too. Maybe not directly with sports events, but I've been thinking a lot about the use of audio. It feels to me that, you know, in the rush to stream everything in video these days, the audio kind of gets forgotten. It's almost seen as second class. And for us, of course, that's not the case. It's the exact opposite. It is our number one. It's our go-to. And I think that, you know, TV channels, for example, could easily broadcast their channel in audio via, say, an Amazon Echo stream or any stream, really, that could be picked up by an Echo or any other device. And then we could have the audio-described version of that stream available. Because why do I want to put the TV on? Why do I need to put the TV on? I could just listen to the television if I wanted to. That would be cool. And just have the audio described feed on there. Now, this could also apply to what you're talking about, Angela, almost like a live event channel that could pick up these big events that happen around the world, almost like a public domain channel, you know, like a public, what would you say, PBS in America equivalent, NPR, yeah. I suppose.
Blindy TV, you know, but, something like that, call it.
Maybe. Yeah, yeah, exactly. But just for, yeah, something like that. You know, but something like that that's, you know, available that people could access. You know, we could get the feed, but just the feed we want, you know, the audio described feed. I mean, there's probably an argument to say loads of other people could enjoy that too, but, you know, let's make sure we get it first.
Yes, absolutely.
I think that would be cool. So I don't think there is, but I do think IRA are moving towards this. This seems to be something they seem keen to be developing back into the IRA Explorer app. That's certainly what...
the IRA Live events. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's what I was thinking as well. And of course, there's always just listen on the radio. Because they need to describe it more, but there's not specific audio description. No, but it is tricky. I am noticing, though, that TV companies are putting more audio description on live events, live audio description, but it does depend on where you are in the world, obviously.
Yeah. It's a great question, Angela. I think someone should run with that idea.
Yeah.
I really do. That's it for today. That's it for this week. Thank you so much for all your feedback. We've literally had a whole week just listening to you, and it's been wonderful, and I hope we can do it again next week. Of course, we'll follow this Google Braille story. It's very interesting. And thank you to Matthew Hospital for jumping on and telling us about it.
Yes.
That's it for today. Best of YouTube and Sunday. We'll catch you Monday. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Red Sail, inviting you to download the latest episode of My Life in Books, where internationally acclaimed authors discuss their lives, their work, and three books that have resonated with them. That's My Life in Books, available wherever you get your AMI podcasts.